Hello, I'm Representative John Nygren, and this is The Right Angle. The opioid crisis that has ravaged Wisconsin is also a personal one to me. It's one my own family has struggled with, and it led me to create the HOPE Agenda, which is a package of bills aimed at providing resources and curbing the crisis. But far too many families still struggle with opioid addiction, and while there is progress yet to be made, this week I'm joined by Representative John Plummer, the chair of the Committee on Substance Abuse and Prevention, to talk about how Republicans are continuing to respond to the crisis and the next round of bills that are being introduced.
Welcome back to The Right Angle, the official podcast of the Wisconsin Assembly Republicans. Every week, we'll give you an inside look at the policies and politics that are driving conversations in the Capitol and across the state. This week, Representatives John Nygren and John Plummer sit down to discuss how Wisconsin is grappling with the opioid crisis. We've taken major steps forward with the HOPE Agenda, and Representatives Nygren and Plummer talk to us about the progress we've made and how the crisis is still affecting Wisconsinites of all walks of life.
John, it's good to be joined by you.
Good to be here.
You know, now that you're the chair of this session of the Substance Abuse Committee, I think it's a good conversation for you and I to have. I've been working on this issue for about 6 years. You're the new guy on the block, but definitely bring something to the table. You know, what's your background and interest in the substance abuse issue?
Well, as you know, John, I was elected for the first time last June, and right after I was sworn in, I received an email from a woman whose grandmother or mother, 82-year-old mother, had been had hip surgery. And as a result of her pain medication, was addicted to opioids. And she wanted me to, and this is long before the committee was formed, she wanted me to do some research and meet with some stakeholders to find out more about it and see what we could do to help people like her mom.
So, you know, I get asked a lot about how we got here, and that explanation is one that I don't think a lot of people understand. You look at the demographics of the opioid addiction in Wisconsin and nationally, I think most people think of it as a young person's problem. But pretty much every single demographic from young children to elderly folks have been touched by the opioid crisis. We have lost life in every single one of those demographics, and that's something that more people need to be aware of. I do get asked that question quite a bit is, you know, how do we get here? How did Wisconsin specifically get here? I can tell you, for me, it came from my own home community being named a heroin town by some major newspapers, Wall Street Journal, USA Today. And it was due to the amount of overdose deaths in our relatively small community and the crime that was associated with it. But in addition to that being my hometown, it actually affected my home. My daughter, Cassie, has struggled with opioid addiction since she was a teenager, something we became aware of, as her senior year in high school began. But this brought not only my community, but myself as a legislator, we're elected to solve problems. And there's been nothing more significant that has affected my community than this crisis in the last several years. So that's what brought me to this battle. And I appreciate having someone like you here in the trenches fighting for us.
Glad to be there. I will tell you, after I was fortunate enough to be named chair of the committee, I had the opportunity to travel around the country and meet with CDC representatives and people from behavioral health. And a couple things that I came out of those conversations with are that we're not the only state facing this problem. Unfortunately, it's a nationwide issue. But you're right, it crosses all demographics. And two of the thoughts that I had immediately were, I think in order to face this thing head on, and I want to credit you for all the hard work you've done in the last few years, is we have to take the blanket of stigma off this and have an honest conversation about the addiction, both in relation to substance abuse and mental health.
You know, I think that's a really great point. One of the best things that I can say we've accomplished in this conversation over the last 6 years is that more people are aware. I think the stigma is a little bit less than it might have been prior. But your story about the 82-year-old grandmother, those stories are important because the average person thinks of it, as I said earlier, they think of it as a young person's problem. They think of it as a moral failing. I've often said walk a mile in somebody else's shoes. You might have a little bit different perspective. We do know that in about 80% of the cases, you know, what becomes heroin addiction begins with prescription drugs. And that might give you a little bit different perspective than the person who hasn't been affected or touched touched by it, to think this could happen to me too, this could happen to my family. The number one entry point for young people, and it happens to almost all of our kids at some point in time, is some type of dental work, whether it be getting teeth pulled, getting your wisdom teeth, sports injuries. These are people, young people oftentimes, that had no idea that this could happen to them, but their body is just more susceptible to the addiction, and the problems spiral from there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The more people you talk to, and I don't think we can stress heavy enough that it does cross all demographics, and it's hard. You're hard pressed to find any family that hasn't been directly affected by substance abuse, whether it's narcotics or alcohol. So it's a conversation that I'm excited that we're finally having openly, and looking for the avenues to help people get back on their feet.
I think the good news is we've seen some progress in our state. The PDMP, the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, is considered like the gold standard throughout the nation, and that's because the Walker administration and myself and other stakeholders listen to, you know, doctors who utilize this tool, pharmacists who utilize this tool. While other states are implementing limits on prescribing for a patient, we haven't done that yet. We're seeing a significant reduction, about 20 to 30% reduction in prescribing of opioids, which is positive. The only way to win this battle long term is to reduce the number of people becoming addicted, and then provide treatment for those who already are. So we're seeing a good success. We saw just recently a report that said our overdose deaths are down for the first time since 2015. That's positive, but when you've still got hundreds of people dying each year in our state, we know that there is work that is left for us, and that's where you and I come in.
Yeah, I don't think that's a very important point that you made. It's not only treatment, but it is prevention, so that we're not dealing with this on an ongoing basis.
You know, one of the kind of the unsung heroes in this that often doesn't get enough credit is we worked with an organization called Pew Charitable Trusts, who, as legislators, we oftentimes can come up with ideas on our own, which are great, and we've done that working with my staff and listening to stakeholders here in Wisconsin. But having an organization that did the research, collected the data, went throughout the entire state and listened to folks. They came back with a list of recommendations that have been implemented here in our state, and I think because of that, Wisconsin is respected as a leader on this issue. But it's oftentimes because of the work of the people that are providing the treatment in our hometowns in Lodi, in Marinette, and those folks are often don't have the opportunity to come down to Madison and lobby us on a bill. But Pew went out and did the work, and I think because of that put us in a much better place than we would have been without them. So I just want to credit their work. And you know what, John, we're here. We're Republicans, but this is an issue that of the 30 bills that we passed, 29 of them have passed unanimously. Anytime I get a call, I'm sure you as the chair of the committee get calls now from families struggling with addiction. We've never asked if they're Republican or whether they're Democrat. We just know that they're struggling. And the good news is we got Republicans and Democrats behind these bills, and I hope that the support will continue.
It is truly a bipartisan issue. I took the opportunity to go around and meet with area high school principals in my district and talk about what they're seeing at their level and with the students as far as substance use. It was a very interesting conversation that I had with all of them, and just recently got approval for a statewide tour. I just want to get out and talk to health providers and law enforcement and social workers around the state and find out what are they doing that's working, and what can we do better to help them. But I was excited to hear you had a package of bills coming yet this session, so we're very excited. We hope they come to our committee. We're very excited about it.
Well, I'm hoping so too, seeing as I serve on that committee especially. Give us an extra opportunity to really dive in. One of the challenges pretty much every state faces is having enough, having adequate treatment available, and Wisconsin's no different. We've done a lot of things. We've created the Hope Centers, which are throughout Wisconsin in rural and underserved areas. There's one in my hometown. We've looked at reducing the barriers from a licensure standpoint, from an educational standpoint, where Wisconsin was an outlier. We're now more in middle of the road as far as states in the Midwest, as far as what we're expecting from an educational standpoint from our counselors. We just need more boots on the ground. But that continues. We still need more boots on the ground. One of the things that we learned from Pew is, one of the things I took away from their report is we would have a very difficult time having enough adequate treatment if we didn't change our system. And we actually were able to, in the last round of HOPE Agenda bills, we passed what's called hub and spoke, which is first introduced in Vermont, and now it's gone to other states as well. And it's just a different way of providing that treatment. You know, you can't have enough inpatient facilities throughout the state. You can't have enough outpatient facilities throughout the state because we just have so many people that are struggling. But if we work within our existing system, if we work within our hospitals and our existing clinics and providers, and they can be the hub, they can provide the initial round of medication-assisted treatment, the stabilization, the initial counseling, and from there, the spokes, our primary care doctors. Wisconsin's got a great healthcare system. You know, let's utilize what we have. And the good news is that we've done the initial round of investigation on how this should be built in Wisconsin. Now we're waiting on our Department of Health Services to roll this thing out. But I'm really excited to see what it's going to look like here in Wisconsin and the access to treatment that it'll provide for our constituents, whether you're in, you know, southeast Wisconsin, southwest Wisconsin, or my part of the state.
It is a challenge, especially in rural areas of the state, and I agree with you. The counties are all facing different challenges and different barriers. So as a legislator and a committee chair, I want to get out and see what are we doing that's working well and what can we do better to support them. And if there are things that are working in one part of the state and they're not doing the other state, how do we coordinate that effort?
Some of the reasons why we've taken incremental steps in other ways, we want to see what works. We don't, you know, we haven't thrown, I mean, we're fiscal conservatives. We're looking out for people. We want them to get the treatment that they want. But at the end of the day, how do we do that? We don't just throw money at it. We invest, you know, target our dollars to what we think is going to matter and what's going to work. But then we evaluate and make sure that it is working, and then we can reinvest more. One of the best examples of that is the treatment centers that are out there. We started with three. I think there's six now. Treatment and diversion programs that when we initially started, I think there were 16 counties. I believe it's now like 60 counties and tons of programs throughout the state that are helping people get their lives turned around rather than ending up in our prison system.
The other area I would like to see us focus on is education, because not only in the prevention standpoint, but I hear that even in areas where they have treatment available, they have a tough time getting people to come in and get involved with it. So if we can get the word out, not only that it's available, but reduce any barriers as far as getting them treatment, I think that's important as well.
So, I mean, there's tons of barriers. We try and break down as much as we possibly can. You know, one of the things I learned in this struggle with my daughter is, and watching other people that have struggled with addiction, is that while, you know, everybody's hope is that you get into long-term recovery, we know that you may be in recovery, but you're not recovered. It's going to be a struggle the rest of your life. And there's different things that help you be more likely to be successful. One of those is stable housing. Another is employment. A couple of the bills that we're working on, hopefully coming to your committee, one deals with sober housing. The kind of the gold standard as far as from a treatment standpoint nationally, not just here in Wisconsin, is medication-assisted treatment. This heroin, this opioid addiction is so strong that the traditional 12-step, you know, that we know from AA or Narcotics Anonymous isn't enough, and the treatment professionals have kind of acknowledged that. So there's three different forms of medication-assisted treatment. Yet we have sober housing facilities in Wisconsin that are oftentimes get Medicaid resources, but they don't allow for any type of medication-assisted treatment. So that's a problem. We're going to look at a certification process that if they're going to get dollars from Medicaid, they have to accept that people need that medication to help with their recovery. But employment, long-term stable housing is important, as I said, but long-term employment. We know that we have a worker shortage in Wisconsin. I think this is an opportunity for employers and employers to come together to say that we're willing to accept some of the challenges that a person in recovery might have. You know, they might need to go to an appointment now and then. They might, from a drug testing standpoint, it might show positive for them having these medications in their system. You need to be able to be understanding and accepting of that. And we also need to be accepting of the fact that sometimes they struggle, they fall off the wagon, and they need to start over again. One of the best places for us to start is for the state of Wisconsin as an employer to be a recovery-friendly workplace, and that is another initiative that we're looking at implementing in this round of the HOPE Agenda bills.
You got ahead of me because I was just going to ask you what was involved in the new package. So I'm excited to hear that.
You know, we've got that record low unemployment. So, you know, what a great time for us to kind of think outside the box. And for the state, as an employer, as I said, to kind of lead on this issue and say, if we can do it as a state government, you, the private employers in the state, can accomplish it as well. I mentioned the PDMP a couple times, Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. For people that might be listening, what this means is when you go to the doctor and they prescribe a controlled substance, when you collect your prescription at the pharmacist is entering it into a database, and next time you go back to the doctor, your record's there. So the doctor can see that you've got this prescription already. It prevents doctor shopping from people going from doctor to doctor to get that opioid or addictive substance. This has actually been one of the best tools we have. Before we required doctors to utilize the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, I think only less than 20% actually were. We're in the 90% range now, and the number of prescriptions of controlled substances is down about 30% from when we first began. The doses per capita in my own home county are about half of what they were when we began. So I think there are trend lines that point towards success. And the good news is from medical professional standpoint, it has been incorporated into their workflow. They now, I hear from doctors all the time, they say this is a valuable tool. I wouldn't practice without it.
I would agree. The feedback that we're getting in our office is that people are once we explain it to them, are very happy that we didn't limit the doctor's ability to prescribe.
You know, when we initially implemented this, we put a 5-year sunset on it. That sunset is coming up. We've worked with our hospitals and our medical professionals to say, okay, this problem isn't solved yet. We need to extend this for another 5 years, and that's another proposal that we have. You know, John, I'm not sure when you get calls or when you talk to people about this issue in your district, one of the things I've heard is from people who have chronic pain, who have issues that need to be treated, and sometimes they have the perspective that we as state government did something to stop them from getting the prescription they need. Just want to be clear, as I said earlier, we haven't passed any prescribing limits or any controls on that here in Wisconsin. Other states have, yet doctors are prescribing less, which is good. But we also have to accept that there are some needs from a pain management standpoint. One of the challenges is both our private insurance and from a Medicaid standpoint may not necessarily cover those non-addictive pain treatments. So we're putting some resources into one of the bills to provide for a physical health funding through Medicaid to make sure that physical therapy, acupuncture, that chiropractic treatment that all can be found to be very helpful in dealing with that chronic pain are covered through our Medicaid system. It's our hope that by covering it through Medicaid can lead the way and we get our private insurance system there as well.
So of the bills that you've passed over the last 6 years, I would assume that most of them were very positively received and have done great work. Were there any that were controversial?
Well, as I mentioned, there's been 30 bills, and 29 of them have passed unanimously. The one bill that had a no vote in each house, and it was actually from our side of the aisle. In both cases, the reason it was controversial, it's called the 911 Good Samaritan Law. We'd actually initially passed it in 2013. We updated it in the last round of bills, I think in 2017. The reason it's controversial is the idea behind the 911 Good Samaritan Law is there's a statistic that's been used in the addiction community that 80% of all heroin users use the drugs with friends, yet 80% of all overdose victims are found alone. Meaning people had used drugs with friends, they had had a reaction to the drug, they had unfortunately overdosed, and their friends left them to die. I can tell you from my own personal experience with Cassie, when she had an overdose event, her friends had left her. Her mom found her, and thankfully we were able to get her the care that she needed, and she's still alive today. The reason that has happened historically, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally, is because of the fear of being charged with a crime if they're in possession of narcotic drugs or other paraphernalia. It has been widely accepted by law enforcement that we're never going to arrest our way out of this. I think our judges, our our district attorneys, our police officers, they acknowledge that we're not going to arrest our way out of it. So the idea that was introduced in other states, Wisconsin's not the first, was the 911 Good Samaritan law to provide a limited form of immunity for the person either helping you get to the hospital, dialing 911, staying with you to make sure that you're taken care of. We had a couple folks that I think believe that we were enabling the behavior to a certain extent by providing that immunity, and that the person should be punished. You know, there's one simple premise I've kind of taken on that mindset. The long-term goal, I think, that you have, that everybody should have, is that we want people to get in long-term recovery. We want to turn addicts into tax-paying, productive citizens. The only way to accomplish that is that they're still alive. So we should always err on the side of saving a life. That bill, we did make some changes to it. For the immunity to take place, you need to enter into a treatment program. There's other contingencies associated with it. That actually had a sunset as well. It was only a three-year sunset, and that's actually set to come off, I believe, in 2020. So we're kind of right up against it. I think you acknowledge, I acknowledge, that this crisis isn't over.
Right.
So let's not undo that. Let's extend this for a few more years to make sure that this problem is addressed, because I do believe that the value of life is there, and that we should do everything we can as state government to make sure that we protect it.
I would agree. I was going to make the same point. I've had the same conversation about Narcan, where people say we're just enabling people, and I always tell them we can't get somebody into treatment and get them well if they're not around. So the first thing we have to do is save them.
You know, at the end of the day, I think you and I come at it from a similar attitude. We want to help.
Mm-hmm.
We want to help people get into recovery, but we're not, I don't believe that we're enabling. I believe that we also understand that there's a law enforcement aspect to this crisis as well. If crimes are committed, there will be punishments that will be dealt out, and as they should be. But as I said, law enforcement understands that they're not going to arrest their way out of it. We've tried to take a unique approach to this problem to give them the tools. We provided resources for, more agents out in the field to, keep the flow of drugs from coming into Wisconsin initially. I think that from an education standpoint, as you mentioned earlier, from a treatment standpoint, from a law enforcement standpoint, we've pretty much checked all the boxes in Wisconsin, and we're going to continue to do that. And one of the reasons we've been able to do that is because we've listened. We've listened to the constituent that contacted you. We've listened to the people that contacted me. And because of that, I think there's hundreds, if not thousands, of people in Wisconsin that are still alive today and that are in a better place because of the steps that the Assembly Republicans have taken over the last 6 years.
Couldn't agree more. It's interesting you bring up alternative treatments. My wife has been doing acupuncture for her knee pain rather than do pain pills, and it's working great for her. So there are alternatives out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good studies on acupuncture. It's one, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about. But if, we're not from Missouri. We're from Wisconsin. But if people can show me that things work, I think you and I are a similar mindset. We're going to, find ways to, implement that in Wisconsin, because that's what we want. We want to make a difference. We want to, change the lives of these folks that have been affected. Nobody should have to struggle with pain, regardless of, whether they're susceptible to addiction or not.
I agree. Well, John, we've covered a lot of ground here. I guess the next question on my mind is, where do we go from here?
Well, we're hoping to have these bills assigned to your committee in the Assembly and, of course, appropriate committees in the Senate. We do expect, if they make it to the floor, to have broad bipartisan support as they've had before. We've lost somewhat of an ally in this battle in the last election. We now have we no longer have Governor Walker. We have Governor Evers. But every indication I've seen from him is that he would be supportive of the idea of continuing this battle, that it's not won, and I'm hopeful that he'll sign these bills that get to his desk into law.
Good. Looking forward to it.
Well, time goes by fast, John, but I appreciate you joining me on the podcast today. It's something new, I think, for both of us, but it was a great conversation. I hope the people listening enjoy as well.
I agree. I think we have to have this conversation. We have to continue to.
And that's The Right Angle on The Hope Agenda. If you liked this episode, please subscribe. Just search for The Right Angle on iTunes and Google Play, Radio Public, Breaker, Overcast, and Pocket Casts. If you have an idea for a guest or a topic, please tweet us at WIAssemblyGOP. That's Wisconsin Assembly GOP. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.